And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Bonnie Berman is off today. This hour we visit with neuroscientist Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman of the University of Texas, Dallas. She's the founder and chief director of the Center for Brain Health and author of the book Make Your Brain Smarter, An Easy Plan to Increase Your Creativity, Energy, and Focus. And she joins us from Dallas. Welcome to you, Professor Chapman.
It's great to be here.
So your research shows that age really isn't all that much a factor in brain vigor. I guess that leaves some hope for me and the AARP crowd.
Absolutely. We're trying to really erase a lot of the stigmatism that's going on with aging. We're treating brain aging almost as if it is a disease, and yet our brain can get better every single day and year of our life if we keep it healthy.
But it seems as we do grow older that short-term memory suffers. I guess it doesn't have to be that way. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not exactly. Memory is one of those culprits, and that does take its toll as we get older. And I always tell people, I say, if when I ask audiences or individuals, what do you wish you could be the better at? Everyone, most people, in terms of brain function, say their memory. And yet, our memory usually is pretty good if we're healthy. I always say at the end of the day, you never stop and say, hey, brain, you sure remembered a lot of things today, but instead you remember what you forgot, which is those two big things, or two small things, typically. And, you know, when you think about the smartest person or the icon of what smartness is, people usually say Einstein. Well, Einstein had a terrible memory. So what we're trying to get people to realize that your brain performance in being smarter is not tied to your memory.
Well, you talk about that age really isn't that big a factor, but most of the real geniuses, say in the 19th and 20th century, most of their strongest work, such as Einstein, were done in the early 20s. And they kind of fade near the end.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is Einstein in particular, he came up with the construct of relativity in his 20s. But he didn't know what it meant till his mid-70s, to his early 70s. So, yeah, he came up with it, but he really didn't believe it. And then finally he began to understand it. And, you know, a lot of our innovation happens in our 20s, kind of good ideas sparks. Unfortunately, right now, the age of innovation and patents is more in the 50s. So it's being pushed out. And most of the reason is it's how we frame the brain, to think that you are smarter at this peak time in your 20s. Go for it, gusto, almost like the Olympics with your physical body. But really, innovation is something that also can get better in patents and developing more and more expertise if we train our brain in the right way. We haven't even begun to stretch our brain the way we have the human body.
Tell us of your work with Navy SEALs and sports figures as far as cognitive potential.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, you know, I've been doing this research for 30 years, and a number of different individuals has turned the whole idea of what it means to be smart on its head, of how we define it, which is memory or grades that you make. But it's the more recent work that we've been doing with Navy SEALs and different athletes. And when they came here to be part of what we call our SMART program, which is intensive training, strategic memory, advanced reasoning training, the Navy SEALs say, you have transformed my mind more than anything I've done. And in our book, Make Your Brain Smarter, I actually put the foreword from one Navy SEAL in because it was so inspiring. He said they spend hours, hundreds of thousands of hours, gazillion dollars on our bodies, but our brains left out of the equation. And You know, what's interesting is many of these individuals, perhaps in school, may not have been the top of the class, or their college entrance exams weren't that high, and they think, I'm not smart enough, so I'm going to join the military. And what we show them is that construct of being smart is outdated and misleading. And it's really the Navy SEALs who have been in this really dynamic, constantly changing, solving problems. When they come to see us, they say, you don't even understand how smart your brain has become because of what you've been through. Don't let school, don't let IQ testing, don't let achievement define what it means to be smart. And in the book, particularly in the first few chapters, but every generation, we make this point of how do you embrace it, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 50s, or 80s.
You reminded me that Eisenhower did not do all that well at West Point, and yet he was the mastermind of D-Day and the invasion of Europe.
Good example. Absolutely. You know, we've got to change the whole construct of what it was to be smart. It's been held by IQ testing that was developed 100 years ago. Think about the metric that we use was developed 100 years ago for the Industrial Revolution. So the metric we're using for our mind, it would be almost like using the metric for airplane operations for the Wright brothers. 100 years ago, what was smart then is not smart now. I mean, it's not this rigid how much you know, how fast you can retrieve it, but really more what you were talking about with the Navy SEALs is this dynamic problem-solving, innovation, constantly changing that makes people smarter. And the older we get, the more richness of the knowledge we build is why we can actually get smarter.
What common activities rob us of brain ability and function? Is it being a couch potato? Or?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the things that we choose to do for our brain because we've been working off the wrong blueprint to get smarter is one is being a brain couch potato. But one thing that we truly think is doing good is one of the worst possible things, which is multitasking. A second thing is information downloading, how much information we're exposed when we're trying to get information on a topic. Third is thinking rotely, taking information in, spitting it back out exactly the way we got it. Not ever having brain downtime is toxic, and letting your brain be on status quo, which is like, I love it when I'm in, just I don't have to think for myself, I'm just automatic pilot. That's very toxic. So those are six things that we talk about and do exercises for all the generations, chapter 7, chapter 8, throughout the book, on what you can do to not be, do the toxic things, but what instead.
We're speaking with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman of the University of Texas at Dallas, and she's the chief director and founder of the Center for Brain Health, and her latest book is Make Your Brain Smarter. Tell me, Dr. Chapman, you talk about a brain health physical, and that it's more important than an actual physical.
Yes. We want people to be proactive about their brain health. And so getting a benchmark to know exactly what they are, which, again, is not an IQ test, it's not pass-fail, and it's not a brain scan. But it is in the three areas that we find young, whether you're an immediate in your age 13 to 24 or young adults throughout knowers, these areas of strategic attention that we talk about in chapters 1 through 3, or integrated reasoning and innovative thinking. That's what the brain health physical looks at. The reason that we think it's important is people are accepting decline in their brain because they didn't know the metric to do. Most of the metrics that we have not been valid.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that the things that we're measuring are not what it means to be smarter. It's just measuring how much you know, what is your memory, and how fast can you do it. That's not what smart is. It's really more the things that we talk about in Section 2 on strategic attention, integrated reasoning, being innovative at every stage of your life. I mean, think about it. Our brain right now is going backwards. It peaks at 20s because we let it, not because it has to. Because we're not doing the things that builds the connections. So we're wiring a brain literally that's tired, overwhelmed, and incapacitated. So the brain health physical gives people a plan to say, hey, quit working 24/7. Quit multitasking. These are the things you need to be doing to really ramp up and feel your brain creative again, energetic, and really focused.
Is there a way to be proactive to avoid contracting Alzheimer's?
Yeah, there's a chapter in the book that talks about Alzheimer's because we do think it's important. I think it's interesting when we talk about brain health, a lot of times people say, well, I don't need brain health yet, because we always think about brain health more in disease and injury. And with Alzheimer's, it's usually the culprit that keeps us from getting help with our brain, because people fear, what if you tell me I've got Alzheimer's? I'm afraid. But even in Alzheimer's, if you keep your brain active, you know, in your 20s, in your 40s, the more cognitive reserve, which is richness of thinking, all the connections that you build by thinking deeper, not breaking down the connections, you're likely to stave off the onset of dementia by 1, 2, maybe 3 years. We've done a randomized study that I talk about showing when we keep people mentally active in this early stage of mild cognitive impairment, we push out the early symptoms of it. So I think there's a lot you can do to stay active. Does it get at the underlying mechanism of Alzheimer's? There's some question. I think we still need to do a lot of research.
But you're not talking about working the New York Times crossword puzzle every day.
No. You know, and that's a question when I ask people, what do you do that you think makes your brain healthier? And it's usually crossword puzzles, Sudoku, and some of the things, because we think about our brain the way we do our body. Well, your brain's amazing. Whatever you practice, you get better at. So if you do the New York Times crossword puzzles, you get better and better at the New York Times crossword puzzles. But it doesn't make you better at higher order thinking, decision making, problem solving, innovation. We are just on the cusp of being able to discover what is it that's going to make your brain and your frontal lobes. You probably read in the book about how important that is. Crossword puzzles build more of a temporal lobe vocabulary list, but not higher order thinking, strategic.
I guess I've wasted a lot of time, Doctor.
Anyway,
we're speaking with neuroscientist Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman. We're talking about her book, Make Your Brain Smarter. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. And we return. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. We resume our conversation with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman. She's joining us from Dallas. She's affiliated with the University of Texas, Dallas, and founder and chief director of the Center for Brain Health, and author of the book, Make Your Brain Smarter. Dr. Chapman, what sort of research do you do at the center in Dallas? Do you do brain scans and memory testing?
The work we're doing here, if you were to say what encapsulates it, is how can we discover how our brain best reasons, remembers, problem solves. So the research that we do has been funded by the National Institute of Health, the Department of Defense. So yes, we do a lot of brain scans. We do comprehensive cognitive testing. But more important than that, we also do how is it being translated into the everyday life, whether it's teenagers in school or the workplace productivity or healthy people in terms of their decision makings. So yes, we do very comprehensive research. And the reason people haven't been so focused on what is it that makes your brain smarter is because we didn't have the technology to view the brain changing in real time. So our research, very hard evidence now, is beginning to show that you can rewire your brain by how you think. So it matters. You rewire your brain moment to moment by everything you do, in good ways and bad ways. So we're trying to train individuals at every age, if you want to keep your mind, which most people do, what should you be doing?
Well, give me an example of it. As we get older, we tend to become much more set in our ways. And
yeah, you know, there is this false notion that you get more set in your ways, but actually the longitudinal studies show that older people can be more flexible. So some of the tasks that we do, both with whether they're 20 or 80-year-olds, is, and you'll appreciate this because one of the comments we got back is, what was the thing that you gained the most from taking advantage of these 9 strategies, from strategic attention, integrated reasoning, and thinking? And they said, well, when I listen to NPR, I now think deeper about it. So there's a lot of strategies that we spell out and give examples for, but let me give you 2 right now. One of the things that we teach in strategic attention in the chapter is, how do you learn? We know how to select what we're paying attention to, but how do you block out information that you attend to? So today in our world of information overload, it's actually the bouncer in our brain, part of our frontal lobe, that's fragile. It's happening in our youth, and it happens as we get older. So the older we are, we take in too much information, we get frozen, and we literally cannot make a decision or can't think deeply about something. So making sure that your blocker, that you choose 1 or 2 things to do, but really stop a lot of the extraneous information that you're attending to. Another one of the really major things that we focus on is what I call integrated reasoning. It's in Chapter 5, and it probably is the cornerstone about what makes a person smarter. And this is when people say at first, they're like, oh, it's too hard. You're making me work. So impossible. But they begin to get inspired and inventive. And what this strategy is to move from rote thinking to transformed thinking. And what that means is, when you're taking information in, the goal is to constantly abstract a take-home message from that. So people are listening to this program today. Instead of trying to memorize my points, it's better if you say, how am I going to abstract that and use it? Whether you're listening to a radio show, seeing a movie, writing an email, it has to be practiced constantly, this ability to abstract meanings. That is the blueprint that we're getting brain change at every single level, and we're getting ready to publish an article of people 50 to 80 in just a short period of time where we saw brain change. And these are healthy people. These aren't people that were like, oh, I think I'm getting Alzheimer's. They felt like they were healthy, but they wanted to see, could they ramp up their brain performance? And we're seeing significant increase in brain blood flow, significant increase in functional connectivity, which is parts of the brain talking to each other, and actually wiring of the white matter stronger.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman, you're certainly welcome. That's 1-800-743-9576. Or if it helps you remember, 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email is open, radio@WLRN.org. An emailer, this is Frank, he says, I recall a story in which an autopsy revealed an older subject had growth of new brain matter. The growth was not a tumor, but new healthy tissue. Is it possible to grow your brain and fight against brain tissue atrophy?
Yeah, our brain gives us a new gift every single day of our life of new brain cells. Depending on how we use it, we either incorporate them in our brain or they're sloughed off like skin cells. So every single day you get the new gift of brain. Till the day we die, our brain works for us. Not only new brain cells, what we call neurogenesis, but actually wiring new connections. So yes, absolutely. And that's powerful because we didn't know even 5 years ago that an older brain could take advantage of this, what can make it healthier.
And that's why the brain can rebound from injury?
Yeah, and you know, the rebound from injury, that's an area I've been doing research for 30 years. And most kind of conventional wisdom, and still widely practiced, is that the window of time for the brain to repair is 3 to 6 months after injury, maybe a year, and it's wrong. Your brain can rebound from injury years, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years. There's no limit to the amount of time. It just takes more intensive, higher order thinking to get the brain to rewire in this. So for us, we're getting ready to hopefully help kids from the time of injury and follow them every single day of their life to make sure their brain is rewired to repair from injury. You know, Joe, think about the concussions, all the bad news on the newspaper about what's happening to our athletes. And for us, that's a starting point. But if we could get to them, we can help the brain to repair.
Tell me more about the use of silence to solve problems and to think deeper. Is that just being able to focus your brain on individual problems and not be distracted?
Yeah, and I call it the brain power of none. This is, I think, really a paradox about our brain, because we're working our brain so hard 24/7 to solve the problems that we're dealing with, the tasks that we face. But the most powerful thing you can do when you're trying to solve a complex problem is move away from it. Take a nap. Take a 5-minute walk. Calming your brain waves for even a very short period of time allows your brain to work for you in ways that if you're consciously trying, it won't pull that information together. So it's amazing. And some of the brain imaging studies, they've shown these aha moments typically come when people are slowing their brain down, the brain power of none. But we tend to push it harder. We think, if I just work 3 more hours or 1 more hour, I will work it. What if the brain power of none pushing away is going to make you solve it faster?
I think
it always works.
I think most people find that when they work crosswords, if they're stuck, if you go back 10 or 15 minutes later, you have a good chance of solving where you were stuck.
That's a perfect example. Absolutely. Our brain, you know, I don't know about you, but I get up in the middle of the night a lot of times at 3 a.m. because my brain's working for me, and I have the best aha moments. But the crossword puzzles, we do it with people's names, you know, all the time. When someone's walking towards you, and you think, oh, my God, what's that person's name? I know their children. I know where they're from. I know everything about them, but the person's name. And 4 hours later, when you don't need it anymore, boom, it comes right to you. Your brain solves problems, comes up with things when you step away, the brain power of none. So zero. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes. We're speaking with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman of the University of Texas, Dallas. And we're talking about her book, Make Your Brain Smarter, An Easy Plan to Increase Your Creativity, Energy, and Focus. Dr. Chapman, before we take a break, how about a website where people can learn more about you and the book?
Great. Yes, we have a website. It's called MakeYourBrainSmarter.com. It has activities, news stories, a lot of things that will advance the knowledge of this. MakeYourBrainSmarter.com.
Let's take that break. We'll be back with more. And we return 34 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. And we're visiting with neuroscientist Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman. Doctor, let's take a call or two. We've got, this is Vanessa. She's in Key West. Hello, Vanessa.
Hi there. Oh, this is such a fascinating program. Thank you, Dr. Bond Chapman, is that?
Yes.
Was just wondering if she was aware of Dr. Michael Merznick, the Posit Science guy that you had on your, you had mentioned, one of your guests had mentioned, I think, last month or the month before that on your Topical Currents program about this wonderful brain exercises that he's created, and she was your guest was recommending that they be that every child in school should be doing this every day. And does Dr. Bond Chapman, is she aware of that? And also, I wanted to congratulate on her on how succinct she is in explaining these things that we can do for our brain.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very familiar with the approach, and we actually did some early studies on it. It's, you know, I think that the brain is so complex that we don't know what all is going to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach that Dr. Merzner takes is actually the opposite of what we do.
Uh-huh.
It works on attending to the finest detail in sounds to kind of hyper-focus. And ours works more on really more the synthesized, abstract, top-down processing frontal lobe. And doing it for 30 years, when people, and we've done from youth, we've done 12,000 teenagers in the last 3 years, and been able to move up their learning from kids in poverty all the way to gifted, we've been able to double their commended scores in science, math, history, and English. Because, you know, what our brain was really wired to do is to see big pictures, mm-hmm. to generalize, to innovate, not to go to the smallest. It really can be very toxic if I said, I'm going to test you, and I want you to remember every single detail I've been outlining in this program. You would be sick to your stomach. Because your brain doesn't like to be at this rote level regurgitation. I mean, it can do it, but it was built to do so much more and
yes.
so much more powerful. And when you shift individuals, you can see from youth to older people, say, it really transformed the way I think about thinking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, these ideas that you've been mentioning today were really made me feel so good inside. I thought, wow, I think this is the sort of thing I like to do, is to go away from a problem when it's agonizing me. That feels so much better, and that you're endorsing that this is the sort of thing one should do is so encouraging.
Yeah, and there's a lot of encouragement in the book. That's what, in fact, I just got a number of emails this morning saying, I feel so optimistic of what we can do when you realize that the things we have been doing, you know, we've bought into this, work hard, multitask, push 7 things at once,
mm-hmm.
work nonstop. So it's not so much how hard you work your brain, it's how you work your brain.
Exactly.
So
I know
you.
Joe's going to mention the name of your book. Would you be kind and mention it again right now?
Make Your Brain Smarter, An Easy Plan to Increase Your Creativity, Energy, and Focus.
And there's information on the website, makeyourbrainsmarter.com.
Oh, fantastic.
Immediately you can go to and get a lot of information about it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay.
Dr. Chapman, how about today's online activity and all the electronic information that we receive and spend so much time on? How does that affect us as far as cognition?
Yeah, I do a number of talks. Is technology good or bad for our brain? And I say, yes.
Hmm.
It's good. And then, yes, it's bad. Nobody would go back. I mean, our technology is allowing us to do so much. The bad part is that we've become addicted to it in a way that we can't even put it aside. And you'll get a kick out of the chapter, The Immediates, and I capitalized media in it, chapter 7, which is the teenagers, young adults, because they don't even let their technology leave them. I say it knows more about them than their parents do, and it's changing the way they even communicate with each other in good ways and bad ways. They can stay connected with more people than I ever dreamed of through technology. The problem is because they're being connected through the technology, the depth of these relationships, they don't know really how to have good, deep conversations as well. So we're doing a lot of social cognition training, if you will, to overcome the effects of technology. So yes, technology, having access to so much information is such a good thing, but it's a bad thing because we're comprehensively skin-deep learning from young to old. And what if, and I'm not saying what if because it's really true, most of the information out there is wrong. So we're downloading, treating as fact a lot of the information because of our technology and not even vetting it, young adults and finders. But the richness that our technology allows us, it's so exciting for me. I wouldn't go back to technology.
Tell me about if we have jobs that are very repetitive and we almost feel like robots, how can we not feel so stifled and take a creative touch to something that's kind of a boring job?
Yeah, Joseph, I really appreciate that question because there are, more generations in the workplace right now than any other time, from young adults to 80-year-olds. And, there's so much status quo and rote that, it's almost like we quit thinking about our brain after we get out of school, whether it's high school or college or postgraduate. But the next place your brain is neuroengineered or built is in the workplace. Most workplaces, the majority, we try to shake them up and say, how much are you neuroengineering a brain in your workplace that can move from the known to the unknown? And in Chapter 6, we talk about that, where you see innovation. I mean, think about the things in the workplace that really rob these long meetings, long conference calls that probably if you were innovative and thinking deeper level processing, you could do in 10 minutes. We want people to be thinking, what is stealing your mental productivity? And it's what you just said, rote, status quo, automatic pilot. Everyone's brain was wired to be inspired, ingenious, and yet we teach them, go do this, and it's don't put any new thought into it. So we're getting that's what's taking its toll on our brain, why we're going backwards in terms of brain function.
So it was deleterious when they made me memorize the Gettysburg Address in high school.
If it was left alone there, yeah, but if you were thinking, what was he saying? Did you think about it in a deeper level way? And how could that meaning be applied today? That's what we train people in ours. So memory, and this is what you'll find fascinating. We actually did a randomized study. We do a lot of randomized studies where we teach rote mnemonics. How can you read it, spell it, multiple association to remember. Was in one group versus more of this integrated reasoning abstraction versus just learn about the brain in general. And the group that we trained to memorize things got better at memorizing things, but they didn't get better at saying what was the interpretation, what did that really mean. The group that we trained to do higher order reasoning, take-home message, they got better at that. But they also got their memory surpassed the group that we did mnemonics in how to remember verbatim. Our brain is very toxic. If I tell you I'm going to give you this list of dates in your test, you're going to have to memorize every one of them. You're going to be anxiety or math tables. So it's like we're killing the brain with anxiety of a way it really wasn't wired to learn best.
So I suppose then a really professional actor or actress, because they're putting meaning into what they're memorizing, that it's better for the brain than just plodding through dialogue.
If they do, yeah. If they think about what it's meaning and am I saying the words to mean the message, and what are the different levels of interpretation? I don't know that learning the words by itself. Anytime you focus on having to learn words at a verbatim level, it almost works against higher order thinking. It would be better probably to read a play and think, what are the messages here? And then what are the words that can convey it? That's what we've shown, is that when you start at the top and then go to the bottom, it's actually more dynamic, rather than learn these words and then try to figure out the message.
We're talking about how to make your brain smarter, an easy plan to increase your creativity, energy, and focus with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman. Doctor, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. And we're back. Joseph Cooper with today's Topical Currents. We resume our conversation with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman. Her book is Make Your Brain Smarter, and that's the website as well, is it, Doctor?
Yes, it is, makeyourbrainsmarter.com.
Tell me, to kind of paraphrase what you were talking about minutes ago, the idea of brain power, this idea of use it or lose it, is actually counterproductive to brain health. Is that?
Yeah. You know, it's not use it or lose it, because we're using our brains so much today. How could we possibly be going backwards in terms of being smarter? But we are, because we're using it. We're literally burning it up. I mean, I used to be able to do, or think I could do, 5 tasks at once, because we're pushed. Are you good at multitasking? How many hours can you work? Can you go nonstop? This type of hard charging, overworking the brain, actually makes fragile connections. We see with these chronic multitaskers, which I'm a reformed multitaskaholic, I have to admit, I used to say that. My name's Sandy. I'm a reforming multitaskaholic, because the evidence is now very clear. The more you multitask, the more you break down the part of your brain that deals with memory, you actually produce more of cortisol, which is a chemical that's toxic to your memory function, and it breaks down your immune system. So multitasking is by far, we're using it, double using it, triple using it, but it's making it weak at all levels of organization as well as functionality. When people start multitasking, they say, oh, you don't understand what I do. I have to multitask. And I say, I challenge you. Try doing interval training. Try doing 15 minutes single task focus and then 15 minutes on one other thing, whether it's your emails or your phone, and watch your productivity increase.
Doctor, why is it that I could tell you, say, who was the National League most valuable player in 1963, and yet I don't think I could come up with what my program topic was on Thursday?
I love it. It's, you know, I do a whole talk on forgetting is good. I mean, if you remembered every single talk, that's a lot of stuff in your attic to clean out. But something, you know, what's interesting about our memory when it's emotionally tied, and our memory for events back when in our 20s is very robust. I mean, people remember their first car, the name of their first girlfriend, and things like that, because it's emotionally charged. So something about that game in 1963 was emotionally charged for you. But our brain, and this is when I was saying, remember that bouncing is good. If you remembered, and please forget, remember the title of this program, but the others you can forget. But no, if you remembered them all, that is a lot of data that actually works against higher order thinking.
Right.
You don't want that.
Let's take a couple of calls. This is Kathy. She's in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Kath.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if the doctor could comment on meditation and how maybe that compares to her concept of silence, brain silence and none, and its role in concentration and creativity.
And so by medication, you mean medication for ADHD or?
No.
Meditation, like transcendental.
Meditation. Oh, I thought you said medication. meditation, anything that can quiet your mind is good. People do it different ways. Sometimes the meditation is an active process. When I'm talking about stepping away, it's really letting your brain more be free-floating, not trying to really take everything out of it, but take advantage of all the ideas that are naturally there. When I say your brain works for you, even when you're not trying, it's still intrinsically, there's a lot of brain activity still going. With meditation, you're really trying to get that intrinsic activity and thoughts blocked out. So it won't be quite as easy to get these more aha moments that come. But anything, I mean, in this rapid charging, we don't even know how to quiet our minds anymore. So meditation is highly successful. Massages, you know, some of these deprivation chambers that are now coming out because people cannot even be in their car without a radio on because we don't know how to quiet our mind or to be in a place where there's no extraneous noise. So meditation is very good because it starts making you aware of when will you let your mind be quiet. And, you know, with kids in school, one of the other interesting things that we're showing is, as well as with our warriors and the Navy SEALs, we showed this, as soon as you quiet your mind, whatever happens afterwards, you learn twice as fast, the decisions you make are more robust, and it's longer lasting. So that's when I say the idea of working it to oblivion, when you can just, by slowing it down, it actually works better for you. That's phenomenal.
Dr. Chapman, we're getting a little short on time, but before we go, you talk about that a brain health checkup is more important than a physical. How do we go about getting that checkup short of going to Dallas?
Yeah, we're getting ready. Part of it we're going to have online soon, so we're working with technology people to do that and get feedback. You've got a brain health plan. So on the website, makeyourbrainsmarter.com, when we have that ready to go, it will be posted there.
And also, You in the book, you touch on increased life expectancy and cognitive decline.
Yeah, we have doubled our lifespan in the last 100 years so that we now live to be 85, 90, and our brain span we've done nothing to. So peak brain span is about 40, 42. That's not acceptable. So that's what my whole mission in writing this book is, to take the science, the hard science, that we now have to show that people, regardless of age, you need to start early and you need to keep it up and not go on automatic pilot. Let's make our brain span match our lifespan.
You talk about how brain science is at least 20 years behind heart health science. How so?
Yeah, you know, for the heart, we know what to do. People can rattle off what they should be doing, you know, eat well, exercise. For the brain, people are like, well, and the things they say aren't what makes it. So we've got a long way to catch up. The brain science is just coming out. We're going to learn more every single year. We've just begun to tap the potential of our human mind. But we need to get training, and to think that you control the destiny of your cognitive performance is powerful.
Well, tonight I'm going to start my frontal lobe fitness plan. Doctor,
how about
a primer on how I should start?
To start your frontal lobe fitness, I want you to think about what were the pearls of wisdom that you got from this interview, not what was everything that I said, and how would you apply them to your emails, to your conversation, to movies that you see? What are the pearls of wisdom that you can take from it?
And we'll take a quick call before we leave. This is Danielle, Coconut Creek. I'm short on time, Danielle. Hi.
Oh, okay, great. I'll make it fast. I work on the computer all day, so the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is stay on the computer. And I wanted to know what you guess things about things like there's a website now called luminosity.com, which claims to be brain exercises, but it's all on the computer. So what am I to do? I do not want to be on the computer any more than I have to be.
Yeah, and that is, you know, those programs are great. They make people feel like they're getting better. You're getting better and better at the tasks that they're training. But it's not making you better in terms of the things that we talked about, you know, in Chapter 4, strategic attention, quieting the mind, higher order reasoning, integration, and being innovative thinkers. So you're right. That is probably the last thing you need to do. For our brain, unlike our body, it's not a product. So when you finish that, It's not like you go off and do your 30 minutes of brain exercise. What we're trying to teach, and the message throughout this book, Make Your Brain Smarter, is it's a way of thinking, absorbing information in everything you do, whether it's writing an email, having a conversation, reading it. It's not something you go off and do 30 minutes. You will have practiced it 50 times throughout your day.
Doctor, remember I said we were short on time. We've been speaking with Dr. Sandra Bond Chapman of the University of Texas, Dallas. She's the director of the Center for Brain Health and author of the book, Make Your Brain Smarter. Thank you very much, Dr. Chapman.
Joseph, thank you. What a wonderful interview. Good luck.
And that wraps up today's program. Our apologies to those callers we couldn't get on the air. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts, Paul Leary's online producer. Find free audio archives and downloads of past programs at our website, WLRN.org. We also have Topical Currents Facebook page with author and book links, photos, and discussions. And tomorrow's program is with Tampa Bay Times media critic Eric Deggans. He's published Race Baiters, How the Media Wields Dangerous Words to Divide a Nation. Are we really in a post-racial, colorblind society? That leads to the calendar. On this day in 1973, 40 years ago, the death of President Lyndon Baines Johnson in Stonewall, Texas, age 64. In his U.S. Senate career, he's considered the most effective majority leader in history, famous for, quote, the treatment, withholding nothing to cajole votes from lawmakers. And as we heard earlier today, on this day in 1973, the Supreme Court decision in the case of Jane Roe versus Henry Wade. Wade was the district attorney of Dallas County. It struck down Texas law banning abortion in most cases. One more while we consider the survivalist lifestyle. On this day in 1998, 15 years ago, Theodore Kaczynski pleads guilty to being the notorious Unabomber in exchange for life imprisonment. His 16 mailed bombs killed 3 and injured 23. And we leave with a thought from the colorful Lyndon Baines Johnson, who succumbed after his third heart attack. Quote, I once told Nixon that the presidency is like being a jackass caught in a hailstorm. You've got to just stand there and take it. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.